You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
You're listening to the Rainy Day Podcast, the official podcast of the Ontario Reign, with your hosts, Cameron Close and Zach Dooley. Now, it's time to get in the pod.
Hello again, everyone. Good to be here. It's a Friday morning. I don't know when the pod's going to drop. Maybe next week, maybe today. That's up to Zach and that's up to Jesse, who we have invited this time. But before I introduce you, Jesse, allow me to introduce Zach. Zach, it's good to see you again.
First billing.
Second.
Ahead of Jesse. Middle billing. That's a good place to be. I mean, you easily could have dodged me. I feel like I usually get some pretty crappy intros here, so I'm pretty excited for the one you just gave me.
I think I've been pretty good lately, Jesse. It's good to see you as well. Welcome to the segment. We'll see how you do. We'll see if we invite you back. Maybe you will be banished to the All the Kings Men podcast, which is yours.
Well, thanks for having me, and I appreciate you respecting my agent's wishes to have me as an and Jesse Cohen at the end of the billing, right?
That's right. You're like at the end of the credits to something, and it says like and whoever as, right. And it actually gives their role, and that's the only one. That's what.
Can't hear you, bud.
Tough go.
All right, we're right back. Yeah, my microphone died. The one that Jesse sent me, the guy who's supposed to get me good quality recording stuff. Yeah, maybe did I leave it on overnight? Sure. Did the battery die? Sure. But Jesse, let's. You've got this very industrious mic in front of you. I want one of them at my house here. Nonetheless, let's continue. Jesse.
Jesse tried to send me one of those mics too, but I typoed my address, so he sent it to some random house like down the road from me, and I never actually got it. And this was like in April.
We tried to send you a second one too, but Amazon Amazon informed us that it was lost in the mail. So
yeah, this is the Amazon Basics mic. Yeah. Let's just say that that's I think the quality that I'm using. So now we're going off. We're all right. We're going to continue right along. Jesse, the reason that we asked you to join us this morning is I promised the fans a game, and a game they will get. I am a man of my word. The closest word is gold, and mine is no exception. So what we're going to do today is another round of before and afters. We've had you on for those before. Zach knows them all too well. And basically, for those of you who haven't heard us do before and afters before, it's my favorite Jeopardy category every time it comes on. And the way it works is you have to combine two names or phrases or places or people, whatever, you have to combine them by one word. Okay. So it could be, you know, if the clue was a place you buy your boots and a, you know, Mexican food, it could be LL Bean Burrito, right? So you could do something like that. Now, these are all going to be Southern California or hockey related. I think there's only one that isn't hockey related, but it is Southern California related. So that's how it's going to be. And here's how we're going to do it. We're going to give you at home some time to buzz in, and you know, you're driving in your car. Maybe there's somebody else there so you can compete with them. We'll give you a little time, and I'm going to ask Zach and Jesse to each raise their hands. First one up, I'll let you know. I know it's an audio only podcast, so you just have to take me at my word that I'm keeping a good eye on these guys, and we'll see how you do. You only get one chance. So if you get it wrong, the other guy can steal. Okay. You guys good? We ready to go?
Let's go.
Okay. All right. Let's start with this one. He only had two of them in his career. Now, may I have some candy, please? Jesse's hand is up. Go ahead, Jesse.
Hat trick or treat?
Nope.
That's what I was going to say, too. But
really?
That...
He only had two of them in his career.
And what's the second?
Well, maybe you got the second part right. I mean, think about it. Two of them in his career.
Oh,
yes, Zach.
Gordie Howe hat trick or treat.
There you go. Thank you, Jesse. Let's do some thinking before we raise our hand.
All I could think of was Ray Ferraro hat trick or treat because I play some NHL 20, and
we could split that. That was.
I feel like Ray Ferraro.
No, Zach, you stole. So I'm gonna give you a point.
That's a steal. I mean, I had that part too. I just had to.
Yeah, I'm gonna give you the point. All right, here's the next one. maybe this guy is going to be a future king, or maybe it's just Kevin Costner's imagination. Zach has answered quickly. Go right ahead.
Should I give the listeners another second?
Or no, they've had some
time. It's going to be Quentin Byfield of Dreams.
Excellent job. Wow. That's great, Zach. You got that one quick. Yeah. All right, here's another one. Two famous three-word phrases. One heard at Toyota Arena, and the other by a fictional detective. You're going to run out of time here. All right, I'm just going to have to let you know what it is. It was Go Rain Go Go Gadget.
Wow.
Could have given
didn't
me
think about weren't thinking about weren't thinking about Inspector Gadget. I used to like that movie a lot as a kid, and you know what I found out the other day? Matthew Broderick married a Sarah Jessica Parker. You know that?
Didn't know that.
Interesting. Married since the 90s, never divorced.
And to me, it's a cartoon, not a movie.
Well, yeah, I like
that. I also Broderick. Used to watch the cartoon when I was a kid.
Yeah, I like the Broderick interpretation.
I was on Sherlock Holmes there. I just kept trying to think
of
lines and I couldn't come up with them.
Well, he's an inspector, so I guess I can understand that.
I just couldn't figure out what Sherlock Holmes would have been saying about getting
I know.
Fair enough. Okay. Okay. Two Kings Captains Ago's favorite movie genre to watch with his girlfriend.
Oh, wow.
Jesse, I'm going to be disappointed. You're like the king's guy.
Well, I'm trying reasonably certain
number
right
one
now
king's who guy.
The king's captain was two captains ago. But
all right, I'm just going to have to
give us another second here. Give us another second.
Favorite movie genre to watch with his girlfriend.
I don't know.
Now I'm calling to, oh, Zach, you're in there.
I'm going to take a guess here.
Sure.
Matthias Nordstrom.
Excellent job, Zach. That was great.
Wow.
Good job. Coming in the clutch. So I believe, Zach, is that three for you?
That's three rip right now.
Can I petition the judges?
No.
I mean, that was a
stretch.
You
may not. That was the, that was good, Zach. Very good. Okay. Usually that gross SoCal hockey team can be seen here, but she doesn't care, said the Beatles. Some tough ones today for you. Some tough ones.
I think I have the first half easily.
I'm sure you have the first half.
Beatles songs are.
But she don't care. But she don't care. If you don't know that, you're not going to get it. The answer.
I do know that, and I'm still not getting it.
Well, Jesse is just.
I'm struggling today.
Could he have a goose egg by the end of the day? The answer is Fox Sports Prime Ticket to Ride.
Oh, wow. All right.
You don't know that one, Zach? She's got a ticket to ride?
I didn't have the first half either.
Oh, for, really? Were you doing Honda?
Honda something? Center. Honda Center, yeah. And as...
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. let's see. We'll do this one. Okay. This isn't really a hockey one. This was when I wasn't thinking of them at the beginning, and then the floodgates opened, and they all started coming to me. Expensive SoCal roads cautionary slogan about safety behind the wheel.
Say that again.
That's a lot of words.
Expensive Southern California roads cautionary slogan about safety behind the wheel. They're tough today. I want them to be tough.
Are.
And you guys just, I mean, Zach's done all right. All right. I'm going to just have to tell you, Rodeo, drive sober or get pulled over. Sorry, guys. You guys,
I was on the right track in the second one. I mean, these are not before, and these are like 7 to 10 word answers. I mean,
well, that's what they are. I mean, watch the show. These aren't $200 clues. These are $800 and $1,000 clues. Okay, and one of them is gonna have the double jeopardy. God, you're not gonna get this one. I'll give you another one. You might get. All right, maybe this guy would say. Los Angeles Kings goal scored by this musical by Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Oh.
Jesse, right in there. Could he get his first one?
Dave Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Great job, Jesse. You got on the board. Now, you're going to have to get both of these right to force all right. the tie. I thought coming up with an odd number would help me. I didn't think nobody would get Go Go Gadget. All right. All right. Here we go. This is going to be a tough one. I don't know. This will be tough. You guys aren't very cultured people, so I don't think you're going to do well with this. Okay. Andy Warhol has plenty of exhibits at this NYC location, maybe more than Gretzky has of these.
Oh.
You got it, Jesse? Wait. Let's give him a second. All right, go ahead.
The Metropolitan Museum of Art Ross Trophy.
So, I'm going to allow it. I don't know if he has exhibits at the Metropolitan Museum. If he does, then I'm going to give it to you, and I'm going to just assume you're right. I had Museum of Modern Art Ross Trophy.
All right,
fair enough. But I'm going to allow it. Let's just assume he's got an exhibit. That was good enough. Good job.
That was pretty good.
It comes down to this. Can Jesse tie? Maybe we'll have to pause the recording and force me to make one more, but we'll see. Let's just see. Maybe Zach can take it. Okay. The final clue. You can't wear number 87 if you play here, but that has nothing to do with Woodrow Wilson's Nobel Peace Prize.
What?
Time? Are you giving up? Zach's just going to take the cake and no one's going to get the last one.
Woodrow Wilson's Nobel Peace Prize is.
Well, where can't you wear 87?
Pittsburgh.
No. It was retired league-wide, Quebec Major Junior Hockey League of Nations.
Wow.
All right. League of Nations created by Wilson to end World War I. Peace Prize comes right after it. Zach, congratulations. Two of them. Too tough for you two to handle, but it was a close game. Jesse came up.
That was your classic.
I'm gonna take away one of Zach's points, though.
What was that, Zach?
I scored 3 goals in the first period and just sat in the lead for the next 40 minutes. Did absolutely nothing, but squeaked out a 3-2 win.
That's what we call the pre-lockout New Jersey Devils way to play this.
All right, but I have to do this, Cam. I apologize. 2 captains ago for the LA Kings was Rob Blake.
No, not if you consider. Okay, first of all, I was going back and forth. So you're saying that Matthias Nordstrom was 1 captain ago?
Well, it's Kopitar.
Okay.
Then Brown.
Yeah.
Brown is 1. Right.
Okay.
And then Rob. Blake.
I would say Brown is 1 captain ago.
Right, and then so the previous captain to Brown would be 2 captains ago.
Yes.
That was Rob Blake. He came back and served one year as captain in between Nordstrom and Brown. Sorry, Zach, taking a point away.
No, we're gonna give
you don't. You don't judge the game.
I mean, we're gonna give it to Jesse. The judges say that you know what, Jesse, you should have been able to get some of these as like number 1 Kings guy. You should have had that. So I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I was trying to think of what movie genre started with Blake. I also want to know how many pumpkins Zach's got behind him.
Yeah, you said I don't have culture. Look at these pumpkins behind me. This is a fall themed podcast setup. Look at this fall.
I would bet my life savings I'd bet it all that Mrs. Dooley decorated the kitchen.
Yes, Mrs. Dooley decorated the house. She is big into fall. I've also got this right in front of me, this other pumpkin on the kitchen table. So there's a lot of pumpkins, a lot of fall themes going on in the house right now.
Nothing like 100 degree weather to remind you here in California that it is autumn, right? With those gourds and everything else you have back there. Well, that was your game. I told you you'd get one. You got it. I still don't necessarily know if any of you like before and afters because I love them. So we do them on here. Maybe you like them. Maybe you hate them. If you hate them, you could have just skipped through this. There's a fast forward button and you could have skipped right through and you could have been able to listen to our great interview with Daryl Evans. If you didn't do that and you're regretting it, I'm sorry. We'll stop. Here's Daryl Evans.
Daryl Evans is a man that needs no introduction. I think you all know who he is. He is the radio color commentator for the LA Kings right now. You see him on Fox Sports West aplenty as well. Daryl, thanks for joining us here today.
It's great to be talking to you guys and being able to catch up. So many people we've been so much separated from over the last 6 months. And again, you know, when you reached out, kind of put a smile on my face, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Well, we're excited to have you. It's long overdue on the Rainy Day Podcast, but here we are, and we, now's as good a time as any, we'll say. So let's open up with our usual way of opening. We're going to give you a would you rather question, and this one's interesting because it's going to depend on maybe your personal preference, how you run your day-to-day. So I'm going to give you the fun part of it first. So would you rather be like an A-plus bowler? Now we're talking like a 300, probably 4 out of 5 games. You know, you're a dominant bowler. You cannot go professional though. So you can only be an amateur. You can enter tournaments. You might be able to win a little money, a little scratch here and there, you know, but you're not going to go into the Professional Bowling Association and make the tour, so to speak, and really have that be your full-time career. You're just going to be a local legend, amazing bowler. Or would you rather never have to do laundry? You've got a bucket, you finish with your clothes, you throw them in there, they immediately disappear, they're washed, folded, and they're right back in your drawer. You never have to worry about laundry for the rest of your life.
Well, I've never had a problem doing laundry. You know, I think at a young age, when we move away from home to go away and play hockey, you know, it becomes part of your independence. So that's not an issue. So it'd probably be the other end of the spectrum there, with the bowler. But the laundry doesn't bother me, and I've got kids as well. And, you know, whenever they're over and that, you chip in and do that. So that's part of an everyday routine, part of hygiene. And that's something that I'm used to doing. So no issues with laundry.
How about you, Zach? What do you got?
I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to take the free laundry for a couple of reasons. Like, one, if you can't go pro in bowling, I think you're limiting, you know, like you said, maybe a couple bucks here and there, but, you know, bowling isn't what it used to be. You're not going to the alleys and seeing full alleys of people to hustle. I don't think it's going to be a big moneymaker for you. I think it's just going to be something
seen,
like.
You've never seen Kingpin?
Yeah, look what happened to that guy. He lost his hand. The guy lost his hand. I'm not going there losing my hand over bowling. Yeah. But with the laundry, now think about it. You could one, save a lot of money on clothes, because you don't have to buy as many. You can have your laundry done for free whenever you want. You don't have to go to the dry cleaners, right? Like, your suits are just done. Does that count?
That's a help.
Yeah. I think that would count. So, you know, it's like if you're playing an AHL back-to-back, you don't have to, you know, worry about bringing two suits. You can just bring one. It's going to be clean for you.
As long as you're okay with everybody seeing you wear the exact same thing 2 days in a row.
I'm behind the scenes for the most part. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. I'll bring a different shirt. That'll change up my look. But
you know what, Zach? First of all, to say that your time is that valuable, we all know you're lying there. And second of all, money isn't everything. Being a local legend at bowling, give me
if
that.
If you gave me golfing, I think I would have taken the golf.
Yeah, I think we'd all have to take golf.
You talk about the laundry. Remember my first year when I broke in pro, we had a couple of guys that when we were down in the minors there in New Haven, Connecticut, Ali's farm team, and you know, we had some pretty long bus trips, you know, 2.5 weeks, 14, 17 days in that. And remember seeing one guy come in just with a very small overnight bag, so to speak. And I'm like, where the hell are all your clothes? And he goes, well, and he had kind of like a leisure suit jacket on, and he had a turtleneck underneath. And he'd say, well, I wear the turtleneck this way 2 days. Then I turn it backwards for 2 days. I turn it inside out backwards for 2 days and inside out forwards for 2 days. So he said, I get 8 days on the same turtleneck. I'm sitting there going like, that thing's going to be growing on you by the time.
That's,
you
know, 8 days go by. Yeah.
Well, we got snowed in at the end of that trip, and out came that turtleneck again. The turtleneck had to come out for like days 9 and 10 towards the end of that turtleneck. Oh, I think it did. I think it walked out of the bus on its own.
Yeah. No one's sitting next to that guy. That's a tough situation to be in. Yeah. Yeah. Laundry has its say, but being a good bowler, you can't put a price on that, Zach.
Yep.
So let's move right along, Daryl. I remember when I first asked you, it's pretty interesting to hear about how you got into being the color commentator for the LA Kings radio team, and it's maybe a little bit more unorthodox than some other guys' stories.
Yeah, it was something that never had been thought about, and with regards to, you know, a post-career type of thing. You know, I felt at the time that I was playing that, you know, when I finished my career, I might get involved in coaching. I've taught skating my entire life. And, you know, I, I'm I always worked with youth programs and things like that. So I thought coaching might be an avenue that I might take. And, you know, getting into, you know, my post career after I finished playing, I got involved in the automobile business. And the company that I was working for, a Cadillac dealership in West LA at the time, you know, they were a prominent Cadillac dealership, not only in California, but, you know, in the United States. And I was very fortunate, great group of people. And one day I was at the airport, you know, picking up my my brother was coming in from Toronto. And lo and behold, the that's on that same flight was the next general manager of the LA Kings at that time. And it was Sam McMaster, who that was during the Gretzky era that he was coming. And Sam happened to be my general manager in junior hockey and going back as far as youth hockey when I was 9 and 10 years old. And we kind of crossed paths. Those were the good old days when you could go to LAX and pull up on a curbside and actually get out of your car and, you know, embrace somebody, wait for them to bring their luggage out. And so we just got talking and, you know, he asked me what I was doing. I told him I was managing a Cadillac dealership. And, you know, he said he was going to need a car for me to give him his car, my card. And, you know, he'd give me a call the next day. And I'm going, yeah, like, I'm going to hear from you the next day. I'll be down by like 10 o'clock in the morning the next day. Sam's on the phone. He said, yeah, he said, they give me the green light. He says, you know, we'll work out some type of deal. And so the deal that we worked out was our dealership. We were going to supply a couple of cars for the Kings. And in turn, we were going to get some tickets. We were going to get a an ad in the program and a 30-second radio commercial. And we had, you know, the tickets were working. They'd come to the dealership. They'd taken the pictures. We, you know, we'd sent them over, and it was now part of the program with the Kings. And the only thing that we hadn't fulfilled yet was the 30-second radio commercial. And somebody from the Kings had called up one day, and I was the point of contact. And they said, Daryl, you know, your dealership, your advertising company hasn't sent anybody over, you know, to do anything about the 30-second commercial. So I talked to the president of our company at the car place. And I said, you know, I said, you know, what's going on here? I said, you know, we're losing out on airtime. He goes, well, why don't you go do it? I said, I've never done anything like that before. He goes, ah, he goes, you know, they'll know you, they'll know your voice. And I said, oh, whatever you want. So I made arrangements to go, and I can't remember who ended up contacting, but they're contacting Nick, who's my current partner right now, who was doing the play-by-play at that time. And you know, Nick said, come before a game, you know, about 4:30, meet him at the Forum, and we'll cut the 30-second commercial. He gave me a couple of tickets to the game, and you know, it was just going to be you know, fun to kind of reconnect with the game of hockey, because I'd been so wrapped up in the automobile business for the last, you know, number of years before that. And I got there that day, and the current analyst, the analyst that was working with Nick at that time was Mike Allison, and Mike hadn't shown up in the building yet. And I, so I just said to Nick, you know, hey, you know, where's Mike? And he goes, oh, he goes, you know, something tragic in the family happened. He's making some arrangements. He's got to go back home. He's gonna, you know, he's gonna do the game tonight, and then he's flying back home tomorrow. And I don't know whether the Kings played the next night again or the night after. I said, well, who's going to do the game, you know, the next game with you? And he goes, oh, he goes, hadn't thought of that. I said, I'll do it with you. And that's how I came about doing my first game. I'll never forget, they were playing against the St. Louis Blues. And I took a media guide home with me and, you know, did a little bit of reading. And, you know, I was still, you know, listening to Nick all the time when I was in the car traveling, you know, to and from work and things like that. And it was easy, you know, to jump in with Nick, because, you know, having heard him for so long, you know, and get an idea of his style. And, you know, he made it so easy, you know, with the pointers that not only he gave me then, but he continues to give me now, you know, 20 years later. And, you know, fortunate enough to work with, you know, the greats, like, you know, like Bob Miller, you know, sitting on a plane with Bob, Nick, and you know, and then Jim, you know, Jim, a teammate, and, you know, doing this, you know, doing, you know, the color job on TV. I mean, those guys have been, you know, so helpful over all the years, you know, watching them, the way that they conduct, you know, their game preparation. And, you know, we all have our own style to a little bit. And, you know, it's still to today where, you know, you're still tweaking it a little bit each time. But that's how game number one came about. And, you know, and then, you know, the Kings approached me about doing it, you know, full time the next year. We couldn't come to terms. I just finally established myself in the car business. I purchased a house. My son was born, and I had financial obligations that I had to, you know, make sure that got taken care of. And so that's when they hired Cammy Granato, and Cammy, she decided she was going to go back and play, and she would need a little bit of time off during the year. So the Kings approached me and asked me if I would fill in those games. And of course, you know, I said, yeah, you know, willingly, for sure I'd do that. It was supposed to be like a handful of games or so. And I think it turned out to be, if I'm not mistaken, 17 games. So That gave me a really good sense of this is something I like to do. And by the time the end of the year came up, the Kings offered me that position, and Staples Center was on the in the process of being built. And I became the director of suites and premier seat sales over there as well. So I was wearing a few hats, but it was great to get back involved in the game of hockey. And you know, hockey's been part of my life, from way back at 8 years old when I started skating and playing, and continues to be so here, over 50 years later.
So when you said to Nick, "Hey, I'll do the game tomorrow," was it like I'm kind of in a, but did you back him into a corner? Was that the car salesman in you coming out and forcing him to put you in the booth?
I think the helpful me in coming out, like, "Hey, I'll do it with you." Maybe not knowing what I was, getting into, so to speak, but again, listened to a number of games, including Nick for so many years, along with Mike and that, I was traveling home from work in the car business. So, I knew it was, wasn't going to be a simple, easy thing like that, but working with, a Hall of Famer and Nick, definitely made it a lot easier. And he made me feel comfortable from day one. And, he continues to, like I say, give me pointers, even, now that I'm, 20 years in and, over 1500 games, you still learn something every day. And, I remember the first game, and I look forward to the next game. It's just, it's been a great thing for me, and it's allowed me to stay connected to the game and stay close with the players for so many years.
Do you ever bring it up that you turned him down at first? If there's ever any disagreement, like, "Hey, I turned you down once, and if you don't give me what I want here, I can turn you down again."
That was never Nick. And the Kings understood that, because at that time it was, they didn't have all the involvement like they do today. I mean, the position has evolved so much. And had it been even maybe 1 or 2 years earlier in coming about, it was something I would have jumped on. And I was, it's funny, the conversation that I had, I felt that there was something there, something was going to come about that, we built a relationship. We made a connection. I remember meeting Mr. Roski at that time. And, then I spoke with Tim Lywicki, so things were moving in the right direction. So at that time, it just felt that, be patient and things will work their way out. And I believe that, and they have done that. And I wouldn't have changed a thing, as I look back, and things have worked out nicely moving forward.
Now, you played in your AHL time, you played a bit for the New Haven Nighthawks, and Nick actually called their games. Did you guys cross over at all?
Well, Nick got called up my first year down there. That was the year that Nick got called up. It was great, seeing him, make his way up. Like that particular year, a lot of guys made their way up from our team in New Haven. Our coach, Don Perry, who I had the previous year in Saginaw in the International League, teammates, Bernie Nichols, he got called up earlier that year as well. And so it was neat to see guys kind of taking that step. And as a young guy coming in, the American Hockey League at that time was a lot of older players, not like it is today. It wasn't, a lot of draft choices. 1980 was the first year that they went to the, to the 18-year-old draft. So, I fell in the middle. I was drafted as a 19-year-old because that was the first year that the 18-year-old draft came about. So there's a lot of older players, a lot of veteran players. So to see the Kings at that time utilize their farm system, not only for players, but again, for broadcasting. And when you look at it for coaching, it was that was something really neat. And and they continue to do that. I mean, they really take advantage and make use of their minor league affiliate, both in positions on and off the ice.
The AHL was almost like a retirement league, wasn't it? I mean, you went through it as a development guy, but a lot of the top end players were almost like, 10-year NHL vets who would come back down, right? So how different was playing in that league when you played in it versus, what it's come to be now?
It was a different league. I mean, when you went as a young player there, you showed a lot of respect to the older players. I mean, the Pierre LaRouches were down there. The Blaine Stoutons, Peter Mahovlich's, there was a lot of top end players, Gilles Loupian, big defenseman with Montreal, Hartford, and that. So there was a lot of veteran players that I think did a good job at, kind of, bridging the, you know, the gap for the young guys. They kind of guided you, even when you're the guys that you played against. You know, if you played the game hard and honest, they would respect you and help you out. Our own players, they were really good because of all the experiences that they had had. You know, the schedule was definitely a different one from playing junior hockey or even college hockey. That, you know, now you were professional. You were being paid. You know, you had to, you know, make sure that you took care of yourself both on and off the ice. Make sure you got the nutrition. Nothing like it is today. So there's a lot of independent stuff there, and I think a lot of that came from the players that the older players that you were able to kind of get closer to. That, you know, they realized that, you know, maybe they were on the downside of things and you're on the upside, and they were trying to give you you know, the best let's say, you know, pointers that they could in order to give you the best chance to, you know, hopefully make it to, you know, to the big stage where they'd already played.
Well, let's stay on your playing career for a minute. When Gretzky played, you always hear that people said he was too small, and he was like 6 feet. Now, you're listed on HockeyDB at 5'8", 185 during your playing career. You played around that time. You played during the 80s. I mean, you must have been considered a very small player to be playing pro. How did you make it to the NHL? How did you last in these leagues as a guy at that size at that time in this game? Maybe now it's a little more prevalent still.
Yeah, you know, like now, I mean, I think in a game like today, I think I would thrive in today's game. Mm-hmm. Because my greatest assets were my skating ability, my shot, had good instincts. And actually, I played defense growing up my entire career. I never played forward till I turned junior. So I had a really good coach at a young age that kind of, you know, gave me an opportunity to see and learn the game. And I knew, you know, my parents aren't big people. I knew I wasn't going to be a giant. So I had one thing I had control of was the, you know, my individual abilities. And that was to be able to skate, you know, shoot and those type of things. First year of hockey, I was a goalie because I couldn't even skate. So I became a power skating consultant, or not a consultant, a power skating assistant at a hockey school at a young age. Before my 11th birthday, I was kind of like a junior instructor. And then after I became an instructor, and I did that, and I'm still doing that today. You know, here we are 50 years later. So I felt that, or I was kind of told that skating was, you know, a huge part of the game at that time. And so be it. It is. And I excelled at that. I always worked on my shot. Loved to shoot the puck. You know, worked out, again, off ice. Those are the things that I could control. And that allowed me to be able to, you know, to be able to play and compete, you know, with guys that were bigger, stronger, you know, and they had a size advantage. So I had to, you know, utilize what I could. And those were, you know, playing with some, you know, heart and passion, and, you know, try and play as smart as I could, and played within my means. And, you know, it allowed me to succeed at every level as I moved up. And like I say, I never played forward till I turned junior. And I was drafted as a defenseman by the Niagara Falls Flyers, went to training camp the first day. And we had a coach there, Bert Templeton was his name, who has since passed, kind of a rough and rugged type of coach, notorious for having, you know, big, tough teams. And he looked at me and he goes, after the first day of training camp, and we had a bunch of returning defensemen, and I think it was four or five of the guys actually went on to play in the NHL. And he said to me, he goes, you ever played forward? And I said, no. He goes, well, you better learn by tomorrow. He said, I got no room for you, you know, back in the blue line. I'm sitting there like, how the hell am I going to learn to play forward by tomorrow, you know, type of thing. And, you know, I give him a lot of credit for giving me the opportunity. You know, he saw something in me, and I remember hanging around there, and ended up making the team as a forward. And at Christmas time, I think I had 7 goals, if I'm not mistaken, at Christmas time. And we had a conversation. It was our last game before the Christmas break. And Bert Templeton had said to me, he goes, you know, Darryl, just come on over here for a minute. Yeah, I said, oh, yeah, you know, hey, coach. And he said, you know, he goes, I remember when you, you know, when you were here, he goes, I didn't think you'd ever, you know, ever make the transition to play forward. I said, well, I said, want an opportunity to play. And he goes, yeah, he goes, but I didn't think you'd make it. He goes, how many goals you got now? And I said to him, I said, well, I said, I think I got 7 now. And he goes, hey, he goes, that's pretty good, you know, for, you know, the limited role that you had and this and that. And I don't know what possessed me, but I said, by the end of the year, I still lead your team in scoring. You know, he's kind of laughing at me. And he goes, that's one of the things I like about you. He says, you're confident. He says, but you're not cocky. And as we went into our last game, it was in Maple Leaf Gardens. We were playing against the Toronto Marlies, the last game of the season. Stan Adams, who was the nephew of Frank Mahovlich. He was my centerman. And we both had 39 goals going into that game. And late in the game, we had an outnumbered attack, and I was able to get him the puck, and he ends up scoring, and he beats me by one goal. So we get back to Niagara Falls after the game. The coach pulls and he goes, "Was you lied to me?" And I said, "Lied to you?" And he goes, "What do you mean?" You know, because I've never said anything to him. And he goes, "Remember the conversation we had at Christmas?" And, "Oh, geez, you know, I forgot about that." I said, "Yeah, I guess I did." He goes, "Nah." He goes, "You could have put that puck in the net." He says, "I know what you were doing." He says, "You know, he had an incredible year." So, and that's where kind of things really kind of took off. And had there been an 18-year-old draft, I think I would have got drafted a lot higher, you know, because of my performance. I mean, at 39 goals as a rookie in the Ontario Hockey League, which was, you know, a lot of 20-year-olds at that time, and even some 21-year-olds in overage. So that was a great learning year for me. Playing for Bert Templeton, I learned a lot how to conduct myself. And I think that gave me the confidence and the courage to, you know, I'd always played against bigger guys because I'd always played ahead of myself. I was playing junior B at the age of 14, 15. So, you know, we were playing against men at that time. So, you know, you had to toughen up, and not that I was going to go out and fight anybody, but I had to make sure that I was willing to go, you know, pay the price, take a hit in order to make a play. And it's something I got accustomed to doing that, and then allowed me to play, go on and play in the NHL.
I think the LA Kings organization just loves ninth round draft picks. Like Luke Robitaille, yourself. We had Matt Molson on the podcast with the Rain player. He was a ninth round pick. So they just love ninth rounders here with the Kings. Like, what was your draft experience like? Like, it was a lot different back then, right? Like, were you at a draft? Did you just kind of get a phone call at home? How did that go for you?
No, we were at the draft, and it was at the Old Forum in Montreal. It was an incredible experience, you know, being in that, in that iconic building, you know, to be able to walk in there. I remember walking, you know, just in the hallways and seeing all the old pictures of the great Canadian teams and things like that. And, you know, being with your peers and in the building and, you know, just listening, you know, whether it was your name or one of your friends' names or just anybody's name being called out. That's an experience that, you know, that I'll always remember. And it was neat to be there and, you know, then getting back home and, you know, the LA Kings reaching out and say, "Hey, you know, we drafted you." And of course, at the ninth round, you know, not one of the guys that you parade down and, you know, do a ticker tape parade to get him down to the stage and get a picture or anything like that at that time. So, you know, the first contact I had was on the phone and welcomed me to the organization. And yeah, but it was so different. I mean, you know, the kids today, they have the luxury of not only meeting these guys, they don't just meet them at the draft. They've had conversations, you know, at the combine and things like that. And, you know, they have it so much easier. I mean, remember going to training camp, like sometimes you didn't know anybody. I mean, if you didn't have anybody drafted that you played junior against or college against, you might go into, you know, a whole new spectrum of players and you didn't know anybody, which kind of, you know, maybe makes you hold back a little bit. But, you know, the guys come in today, they're very confident and the organizations all do a great job. You know who the trainers are. You're not afraid to report an injury. You know, the assistant coaches, the coaches. And, you know, it just, what it does is it brings the best out of the athlete. So I think that's one of the great steps that have been made as we transition from, let's say, my draft in the 80s to, you know, coming up here in 2020, 40 years later.
You spent your first several years with the Kings as a player, then you move on to the Capitals and then the Maple Leafs organization for a bit. When you left the Kings, did you know, like, you know, when I'm done, this is going to be where I live for the rest of my life?
You know, not really. I think I was, you know, way too young at that time. You know, I was hoping for, let's say, more of an opportunity with the Kings. And, you know, nobody ever wants to get traded. I got traded my last year of junior. But, you know, with the Kings, you know, I was hoping to, you know, to make my whole career with the Kings. You know, that didn't work out. You know, get traded to Washington. And, you know, and then I signed with Toronto as a free agent. They were all good experiences. But I think you always have a soft spot for the place that drafts you, that shows, you know, the confidence in you that, you know, that they're willing to take a chance at you. When I was playing with the Kings, I met my wife, or my ex-wife now at that time. And so that kind of, you know, drew me to Los Angeles. Spent the last couple of years of my career over in Europe. And then, you know, we came back to Los Angeles. Not sure what I was going to do. I was all set to go back and coach in Europe when I actually retired, when an opportunity came up in the car business. I'd already agreed to go back and coach over in England, where I spent the last year coaching. And again, it's something I never regret. That, you know, it turned out to be a good move that got me into the car business, and eventually it led to you know, to me being you know, Nick's partner on the radio.
So go ahead, Zach, please.
I just had one more question on your European playing. It looked like you played in Italy, played in England. You know, you hear so many horror stories from guys who maybe go over there today, play in the KHL or play in Russia. You don't hear so many from the guys who are in Italy or England, but what was your experience like playing over there? I saw your stats in Italy were pretty impressive.
Yeah. Italy was, it was an incredible place. We were in a little village. You know, and at that time, there was only two imports on each team. The other import was Steve Tajura, who was with Philly's organization. I think he put some time in with Jersey as well. But he was the other import. We went over. We both had young children at that time. And it was just a little village way up in the Alps there in northern Italy. You know, easy schedule, 32 games, you know, just bus travel, no flying. It was picturesque. Great place to, you know, to raise children and all that. So I really enjoyed that experience. The owners of the team treated us exceptionally well. There was one street in town, about 2,500 people at the time. The year we got there was the first year they had a grocery store. It was such a great, you know, great way of living. England was a different experience. You know, it was funny when we got off the plane in England, you know, with my wife at the time, and, you know, the guys come over to us and welcomed us. And she goes, "What the hell language are they speaking?" Like, we couldn't understand because they had like all these different Geordie accents and all this kind of stuff. I said, "I had a better chance of understanding the guys, you know, down in Italy than we did with these guys." So it took a couple of weeks, a few weeks to be able to start understanding them. But we lived right along the North Sea there. And that was a great experience. I had a castle that I used to walk my son to every day. It was like, you know, thousands of years old. And we used to go just play around there every day. And the people, you know, they were great as well. A completely different experience. Whole different way of hockey, that's for sure. In Italy, we played in outdoor rinks. That was a great experience, you know, being up in the Alps. And, you know, just see, you know, taking the game back so many years, like when we played when we were kids being outside. Italy, we got to go up to Scotland and play. We were down in Wales playing. So we got to, you know, travel and see some incredible places there as well. Two great experiences, you know, great memories. And I think, you know, really help, you know, kind of mold me as a person and, you know, being able to get out there and kind of grow as an individual for what was going to happen, in my post career.
Well, let's get back to the post career for a second. You do the games on radio, you do the color commentary, and then we see all the time on Fox Sports West. I imagine you love being able to be a part of both broadcasts. Is that a tough thing to balance at all during the games?
Not at all. I mean, I really cherish both positions. You know, doing the games with Nick is great. You know, then getting the opportunity with Fox Sports to be able to, you know, add some analysis on that as well. I enjoy it. You know, it's a sprint between periods, you know, to get down to where I've got to get down to or up to where I got to get up to. And I love it. I just, you know, I'm a high energy type of guy. So those type of things, it's, you know, that I embrace that type of thing. And, you know, I'll continue to keep doing that as long as, you know, they provide that, you know, for me, that opportunity for me. I love having both stages to be able to, you know, put my opinion and, you know, and my voice on. And, again, very, very grateful that I have had and have the opportunities to be able to do that.
Well, everybody that sees you on Fox Sports West knows you're infamous for your fashion sense. When did that start? You know, you've got I don't think I've ever seen you wear the same thing twice.
No, I wouldn't go that far, but I think it's something that I've always taken a lot of pride in. And I think it goes all the way back to, you know, junior hockey, even before junior hockey. I remember the first a couple of teams that I played minor hockey for being like Pee Wee and Bantam. You know, when we finally, like, we went to Quebec for the Quebec Pee Wee tournament, and we went to Bantam, in Bantam, we went to a tournament in Switzerland, and we had, so to speak, a kind of a team uniform, which included a sport jacket, you know, a turtleneck, or a pair of pants at the time. And then I remember when I finally got to junior, and I bought my first three-piece suit, my mom and dad bought me a three-piece suit, and that was something I took a lot of pride in wearing. And then my grandmother, at the time, can't remember what birthday it was, she presented me with a pocket watch that I love putting in my vest. And I just like that style. And I just felt that, you know, going to a game, that being dressed up, you know, it was kind of a, you know, even at that young age, it was a professional kind of thing to do. My dad wore a sport jacket and pants, you know, to work, or a suit, to work every day. He was in sales, and I liked the look. And, you know, then as I started to buy, you know, my own clothes and things like that, I always kind of, I like nice classy things, but then I always like things that were a little bit different. And when I started to see some materials that would come out that have a little bit of a shine or maybe a little extra pattern or design on it, it kind of caught my eye. And it's like now I'm at the point now where I go to the cloth shops, and I actually pick the cloths out myself. And when I go in there, it's great because, you know, for the most part, for the most part, it's seamstresses and things like that, and designers in there. And here I pop in, and they think I'm shopping for somebody. I said, no, it's for me. And, you know, they kind of get a chuckle out of it. Then I show them the pictures of the suits after they're done, and, you know, they get a laugh out of it. But I enjoy that. And I like different things. I like things that have a little bit of a shine to them and something to kind of catch your eye. I think it kind of speaks a little bit about, you know, kind of who you are. Like I like whatever I'm doing, I want to be known for what I'm doing, and I want to be seen what I'm doing. And I think that kind of just adds to, you know, what I'm doing.
I have one more for you on the Daryl Evans quirks line. So you skate with no laces in your skates right now. When did that start, and how do you possibly do that?
Well, as a young player, again, going back to that first coach that I had, because I couldn't skate, you know, at all. I became a goalie because I could not move like 2 feet without falling down. And my very first coach that I had in travel hockey, he said to me, so you should keep the top eyelid undone. He says, you give you a little bit more flexibility in your ankle. Okay, you know, what do I know? And so I left two eyelids undone. And we had the point where you had to do your own skates up. So I was probably as weak as could be, so I couldn't tighten them very much. So my skates were always loose. And so I had two eyelids undone. And then eventually, as time went on, three eyelids, sometimes four, and then five eyelids. But what I would do is I would tape them loosely, so I would make sure that my ankle wasn't exposed to, you know, have a blade come in there and kind of keep it, you know, everything wrapped. But I had more flexibility than they were if they were tied tight. And my skates, like the laces were, you know, probably 2 inches wide at the toe. So they're just basically laced and not tied up. At the end of my career, when I went over to Europe, I said, I might as well get rid of the tape here, you know, get even a little bit more flexibility. Did that. And when I came back, I said, maybe I'll cut the lace a little bit. So then my lace used to be about, maybe 18, 24 inches long. And I put it through two or three eyelids in the middle of the skate, just so my skate didn't fall off when I skated. And I thought, what the hell, you know, I got rid of that. So it's been quite a while that I've skated without laces. I look at it as our feet being a lot like our hands. There's a lot of mobility, a lot of different places that you can push in that. So having that, you know, flexibility and that range to be able to move my foot around in my skate, I think I can get different pushes and things like that, especially with regards to the edges when I'm teaching my edges and that. I can actually turn the inside of my boot all the way down and lay it on the ice while my skates are standing up there. So I think it's just, again, a little bit more, you know, flexibility, a little bit more range of motion. In a game, it's a little bit tough, and I play our alumni games with them like that now. But I can feel like especially if I want to do a real quick burst to get out, I feel my heels, you know, pop out of my skates, and maybe one day I'll leave a skate on the ice somewhere at one point, which won't be too good.
You got to trust your the guy sharpening your skates if you're going to wear them like that and try to make those turns.
That I do. They do an incredible job, the guys. Yeah.
Well, very good. Well, Daryl, we really appreciate your time. We're going to let you get out of here, and hopefully we'll talk to you again. Hopefully we'll talk to you again in person next time on the Rainy Day Podcast here.
I look forward to it, guys. Keep up the great work, and we'll look forward to touching base with you again real soon.
Thanks again to Daryl. We'd love to have him on again. I feel like he's a guy that has a litany of stories that you could uncover. I mean, just what a career, what a path to get there. Zach, for our second segment, we did Close Encounters a while ago, and I've got another edition of Close Encounters for you. So those are just kind of things that I find that I think about. I got a few decent hockey ones in here that are good talking points, but then I got a few things that I've just encountered that I got to talk to you about. And I'll start with one of those. I was at the grocery store. yesterday, and it was a grocery store that isn't a sponsor, so I'm not going to say who it was.
We should be sponsored by a grocery store for the amount of grocery store stories we tell on this podcast.
We should be.
We should really be getting some free groceries for that. Like, I feel like we can give a lot of positive PR.
We love Sprouts. Sprouts is a great, great grocery store. So as far as we're concerned at the Rain, I love Sprouts. But this grocery store I was at had a sale on drumsticks, like chicken drumsticks, mm-hmm. 16 for $3.50, like the big, big package of them. So I saw that and I was like, I guess I'm having drumsticks for dinner tonight. So I bought them and I realized that drumsticks are one of those foods that you just can't ever make as well as they make them at a restaurant, like a wings place. So great value. I ate them. They were fine, but you can never even come close trying to cook those up to a restaurant.
100% agree.
Yeah.
Because I've done the same thing. They're always cheaper than the chicken breasts and they just never are as good.
Yep.
Like I always wind up getting the chicken. There was a great deal on chicken breasts the other day. Picked those up. It was like a buy one, get one type thing. And another, probably a different grocery store. But yeah, I will not do like the drumsticks or the thighs at the store because I just, maybe it's me or us, you know, we just can't get them to be as good. I agree with you.
Yeah. So that's just, if you see them, great value, buy them, but just know you're going to be somewhat disappointed. Okay. Next, Steven Stamkos, watching him play the other night. Thank goodness he's back. I really didn't care about this Stanley Cup final, if I'm being honest, with the exception of, I'm just happy to be watching hockey and happy that, you know, they're going to award the Stanley Cup. But now that Steven Stamkos is back, it's like good, because if the Lightning had won it without him, it kind of would have stunk. It kind of would have felt like a gyp. I think that everybody wants great players to win the cup when we don't actively root against them. And he's definitely one of those for me. Like when I saw the Capitals in the cup finals, like, yeah, it'd be cool if Vegas won, but I really want Ovechkin to win a cup. Stamkos is one of those guys for me. I hope they win. I hope he gets to hoist the Stanley Cup. It was great to see him play.
Now, do you feel the same way if that's the only, if those five shifts are the only shifts he plays in the series?
Yeah, because you know what? He has done so much for that organization. He played a part during the season. You know, obviously.
For sure.
He's not going to, you know, he helped get them there. He has helped, you know, he's been a key piece of why they're so dominant. And I don't care. I'm just happy. Like, he still would have been a Stanley Cup champion in my mind to an extent if they had won at all without him. But now that they have him, like, thank goodness, just get him out there for a few shifts. He scored a goal.
I was watching that game and here's a take for you. Like, if that game three was game seven, that would have been one of the greatest moments in hockey history.
His goal
coming back. If he had come back in game seven of the cup and scored after that injury, the way he scored that goal, that would have been like Bobby Orr, legendary, memorable for me.
Like a Paul Kariya kind of thing.
Yeah, like one of those just like moments that you'll never forget watching. Like the Kariya, the Bobby Orr, Raymond Bourque, like one of those moments. I think it would have been iconic.
I think he's going to have a big series. I do.
I mean, he's out for game four.
Right, but I think if he plays again, I think that he's – like I don't think he's done scoring. I think they're going to get him goals. Are they saying he might not come back at all?
They said he's out for game four. This pod will drop after game four, probably after game five even, but they said out for game four, game five is still possible.
All right. So we'll wait and see.
Most expensive fourth liner in the NHL.
I hope he gets to raise the cup. I didn't want to see him have to come out there after not playing in the uniform and raise it. That always is weird to me. So I'm glad. I hope he's on the ice and had built up a sweat and then gets to hoist.
This is actually one of those finals where there's like a few guys on each side that I kind of feel that way about. I like Joe Pavelski a lot.
Sure.
A lot of Kings fans probably don't, but like that guy does so much the right way. Like I love Joe Pavelski, so would like to see him get one, just like you'd like to see Steven Stamkos get one. And you know, there's a couple guys like that that you would like to see win.
Sure. Yeah, no, I agree. The thing is with Dallas, they have Sagan and Perry, who, you know, I think are probably more controversial figures. So I think nationally you're gonna have, especially here in LA with Perry, right? You're nationally, and Pavelski for that matter, you're going to have more guys, more of the nation rooting for Tampa. I think they want to see Stamkos and Hedman and those types of guys. But But no, you're right. Like, I have no problem with Podolski. I'd love to see him get one too. Not as much as Thornton, as far as.
Right. Or like an Andrew Cogliano type player, guy who's just worked hard for,
right,
you know, 15 years, grinding it out.
That he wasn't there when they, when the Ducks, no, he would have been up in Edmonton or something like that.
I think so.
Yeah.
If he was even in the league and.
Right. Okay. Next up, not hockey related, Chatty Cathy's driving me crazy. Lately, a lot of people, I maybe it's just because I haven't interacted with a lot of people lately, but I went to a restaurant and, you know, took the wife out. We went for a nice outdoor dinner, ordered a bottle of wine, and the guy talked about the bottle of wine for like 10 minutes and it drove me crazy. I don't know anything about wine. I am not Jim Fox. I like wine. Like, I know what I like and I know what I don't, but I don't know anything about it, nor do I want to know. So Chatty Cathy's driving me crazy lately. Also, airline pilots that talk too much on there, I don't care how many, we're high in the air, I don't care how many feet we are at. Chatty Cathy's irritating me lately.
I feel like when I'm paying for these services, like I'm paying to be on the plane, I'm paying to eat at your restaurant, not paying to hear you talk to me.
Exactly. You know, I'm in Boston, the flight's taking off, we're 6 hours away to LA. I don't care what the weather is right now in LA.
Don't care.
You're pausing the movie. So Chatty Cathy's, I'm done with them. Walking. I did a lot of walking before the fires. Like, I was walking 4 or 5 miles a night. We'd go out, you know, golden hour and walk. Just started doing it again now that the air quality's better. Love it. Feel healthy. Feel great. Just something.
Do you consider walking to be exercise?
Yes.
See, I don't, at least for me.
Well, it depends how you're walking. So you live, well,
you, I live in the hilliest area in the United States. I'm pretty
really?
Sure.
Really? In El Segundo?
Oh, yeah.
So I was going to say, I'm up in Pasadena. There are hills galore. Like, we'll walk up these neighborhoods. It's, oh, yeah, I get exhausted.
Interesting. I guess
you got to find hills.
It depends. I mean, if you're going for 3-4 mile walks with a ton of hills, yeah, you're probably right. I don't consider it that for me. Like, if I go for a leisure walk, I don't consider that to be my exercise. Like, I need to go for a run or, you know, workout type thing.
Walking's nice because you can have a conversation. You can walk around, and then the hills you can't. Like, sometimes we drive up to La Cañada and it's just up and down. It'll be straight up, and just something I wanted to let you know. Okay, another thing. I miss the orange NHL logo a lot lately. I loved it. I loved the orange logo. And there's a piece of me that's kind of wondering, like, you know, is there going to be a time, maybe in the next 10 years, maybe it's not orange, but that they're going to change the logo up. You'll still have the shield. It'll be still be something to do with that, but are they going to like sleeken it up?
I'm sure they will at some point. Like, every, I feel like the NHL's logo has evolved a couple times, you'd have to say, over the years. And when technology grows, I'm sure at some point it'll grow. I guess I just don't really think about it. It's a good point. Like, it was cool to have the orange one, but yeah, I don't think about it at all. It's just been the black, white, and gray logo for a while. Maybe there's no white in it. Maybe it's just black and gray or black and silver.
Maybe like the 125th anniversary, we can do it just for like a year. Go back to the orange referee logo, you know, something like
that. It's coming up, right? Like, what, 10 years, 15 years?
15, maybe. Somewhere around there. A little more. Hmm. Yeah. Something to think about. What do I know? Another logo thing I was thinking of. Everybody's obsessed with the Whalers logo. Like, it's universally loved. Do you think that if they were still a team right now, it would still be like, you know how everybody loves the Blackhawks logo to an extent? Like, everybody mm-hmm. seems to like that. Like, do you think the Whalers logo would be in there? Or do you think people would be like, oh, it's such a stupid logo. It's like a whale tail. It's like a thong. Like, you think they'd like make fun of it? You know,
I think, like, it's one of those things that, like, when it dies, it gains popularity type thing. Like, sometimes you'll see it with like musicians whose music becomes popular, or like a movie that becomes popular 10, 15 years. I think it's one of those where it's not that great of a logo, but it's vintage. It's like it's really cool.
Right.
It's Hartford. Like, Hartford had an NHL team. Like, that's cool.
Yeah.
Hartford had a team. And I think it's one of those things. I don't think it's actually that good of a logo, but when the Hurricanes wear the Whalers jerseys, they look amazing.
Right.
I think they looked great. There's a lot of cool Hartford things. The logo itself isn't that great, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think if they were a team now, I think it's a good logo, but I think I'd be skewed. My mind would be different. I think we'd all hate the logo and be like, Whalers, that's a stupid
name. Hartford had been a team from when they moved to now, the logo would have changed 100%.
Sure.
Would have changed.
Yeah.
It wouldn't definitely be the same. It's not like one of the original six teams where their logos don't change. It would have changed.
Yeah.
Like every other team's does.
Yeah. Well, there's a few other teams, I guess, right? Flyers have a pretty clean one. They'll never change that. But
I think theirs has changed a bit. Like it's
to an extent, right?
Right. Like I think Hartford would have at some point had to have done. They would have changed it.
Yeah.
In some way, whether it's a full change or like a Flyers or like a Blues change where it's small, they would have done something.
Hartford, Connecticut. They could change their name to the Hartford Abandoned Warehouses or something. Whatever has to do with that. Malls. There you go. The Hartford, yeah. Hartford rubbish. The Hartford pollution. Something like that. All right. Moving right along. I grew up in New England. You drive through Hartford a lot. You get stuck there because people think that the traffic's bad out here. Connecticut. Trying to drive through Connecticut to get from Massachusetts to New York is horrible. Just keep it in mind. Okay. This is the final one I have on here. Is Martin Brodeur the Brett Favre of the NHL? Like, I was kind of looking at their stats the other day. Like, Brett Favre, Hall of Famer, Super Bowl champion, great player, leads the league in all-time interceptions and pass attempts. Martin Brodeur, you know, Hall of Famer, Stanley Cup champion, leads the league in wins and losses. Right? Kind of similar. Like, you're talking about just attrition with both of those guys.
I think that's fair. I mean, I think a lot of people say Brodeur is maybe the best goalie of all time. I don't necessarily think that's the case. They both have their, you know, off the field issues as well. Which
they both played for like one team and then one other team at the end, and it didn't really work out.
Yeah, Favre, I guess, had two, but
I guess
I think that's actually like a pretty good comparison. Like they're both excellent, but maybe considered to be a little bit better than they actually were. Like,
just I don't because think of their losses, longevity.
I don't think wins and losses for goalies means much. You know, like you could have an incredible goalie on a bad team or a great goalie who played longer than everybody else. He's going to have losses, like
right
kind of thing. But yeah. I think that's a good way to put it. And, you know, also like Brodeur played behind the trap, whereas, you know, like a Dominic Hasek played behind much worse teams.
Right.
Kind of thing. So you could look at that too. But I think that's actually a great take.
Yeah, good. I'm glad. That's tough to get out of you, actually.
Yeah.
Good take. All right. Well, good. Then definitely finish on a high note. I don't have any more, but even if I did, I think I'd just cross them out. Good. If I can get a good take out of the Rain Insider, it's going to be a good Friday. Good Friday. Maybe the Celtics will get a win. Maybe Jason Tatum will score some points. Never care about the NBA until the Celtics play in the playoffs, and then I become this basketball analyst where I'll watch 5 minutes of the game and I'll start texting my friends from back home like Tatum can't hit a shot. This is so classic. I've probably watched like literally five Celtics games in their entirety, which have all been playoff games. And I'm a bandwagoner.
I'm more than a bandwagoner.
Yeah. Basketball guy. Hey, if they get out, I probably won't watch a game in the final. So that's where I'm at. All right, Zach, I think I'll let you go. Good stuff. Good talking to you today. We've got a great guest next week, but I don't want to tease that too much unless you want to. I mean, that's your call, because just in case plans change.
We'll see how it goes. We'll probably tease that next week, maybe a little bit in advance on social media.
Good guests coming up multiple weeks. All right. Enjoy your week. Well, no. When's this going to drop? Enjoy your week. Enjoy your day. Have a good one.